What's up, everybody? In today's episode, we have Chris Wilson. He is CEO and founder of Stress Sciences over in Australia. He's an elite performance coach who's studied stress and how it affects the body for most of his career. And he's worked with pro athletes, military, top execs, pretty much the people that are the most stressed around town. And he's got some pretty cool tips and tricks on how to deal with it. One of the most impactful for me is, well, I've been feeling like I'm pulled in many different directions. And the trick is not, it's not to take things away, but to add more value into the things that you are doing. And that's a little bit about some of the stuff we talk about. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about stress on today's episode of the Play Hard Podcast.
Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard.
I think you look great, man. Hard, I think it's all good.
You're a smooth operator.
So how are you doing? How are things in Australia? It's like 10:30 a.m. for you guys there on Monday, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
living in the future. I'm back on Sunday still.
Man, you know, the future's bright. You can see. get there.
That's good.
It's good, man. We got funny, like it's summer here now and it's pouring the rain and thunderstorms. It's just weird. So it's we love the rain here. Like it's just doesn't happen. South Australia is the driest state in the driest country.
Oh wow.
And so, you know, we've all got rain tanks and everything else like that, but man, it's tight.
Yeah, I actually, so it's been in San Diego where I'm from, and you've been to OB, you've just spent some time there. Yeah, so it, same case, doesn't really rain that much.
I can't remember how to do it now, the OB, I don't know, whatever it was.
the sign. It doesn't rain much, but it's been San Diego winter, so you know, it gets to the 50s and everyone's freaking out. And then it's a little bit rainy. So I was walking out in one of the canyons over here and it was lovely to see everything's finally turning green. Cause for the most part, it's all dried out. So yeah, no fires, at least for the next month. That's good.
No, it's true. So when the green starts sprouting again, you kind of know the nourishment's come in there. You hope the greens don't burn as quick as the browns. Yeah. Get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I was watching that from over here. Hmm.
I noticed you were originally from the UK. What brought you over to Australia?
Geez, I worked on the oil rigs back in the UK.
Really?
And they were sending our rigs back to the Gulf. And what I ended up doing was I took redundancy. There's a long story short. I was a young man. I was single. There was guys with families who really needed the job. So I stepped out of the way. And I was kind of, you know, I'm 24, grabbed a flight around the world, come to Australia, got drunk for the first 3 months, and then just went on this exploration. So I ended up living up in, I don't know if you know it, but we've got Northern Territory here. Then you've got Arnhem Land, which is a sacred Aboriginal land. So I ended up living in there and adopted into Aboriginal families. And
wow.
And just fell in love with the place, to be honest. Then
you're inspiring me. I'm 24. I'm about to just drop everything and check it out.
I wouldn't recommend it. It's not for the light hype. Well, the flip side of that is I probably spent the next 10 years chasing to get back into Australia.
Wow.
I didn't have qualifications. I left school very early to join the military and they just wouldn't let me in. So it was a long journey of trying to get in. And then eventually I got in on my wife's coattails. So she got a visa. I got in.
Nice.
Woohoo.
You never left.
She can leave me now. I'm done.
You got your visa.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks.
Oh, that's hilarious. Wicked.
So we got Isla now. She's 8 years old. She's doing really well. She's loving it. Just going surfing tonight and, you know, back in London, you just wouldn't get any of that.
Yeah, I actually was curious because you said you really like the beach. If you did surf or did anything like that.
Oh, look, I'm not a surfer. There's guys here that just are, it's a religion.
Oh, yeah.
I love the water. So last night, just grabbed my dog, sunset. We'll go for a walk on the beach. I'll get my legs wet and the dip in the ocean. But to go every day surfing, nah, it's just, I really want to, man. It's just something else to put into your calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what that is. I always tell people I can stand up. When I lived at, when I went to college at Penn State, when I went to college at Penn State in the middle of Pennsylvania, if they asked me if I surfed, I would say, yeah, there's no water. Yeah. They're not going to check. But nah, and anyone like actually surfs, I'm like, I can stand up. That's about it. Like,
yeah, that's right.
I don't go consistently. It's not something I do, but I've always been a big fan of water activities and just hanging out at the ocean. Like yourself, big sunset. Over here in San Diego, you try to find the best spots to just hang out, watch the sunset, look for different cliffs. There's a whole bunch of cliffs just facing over the ocean, and that's a big thing to do here.
I'm having mad flashbacks. So, you know, we're in OB, staying in a shack. We used to get our little bikes with the hooks on the side, put some surfboards on there.
Yeah.
And I just at the end of OB, you got this sort of bridge or pier or whatever you'd call it, and the waves breaking there. I got tombstoned two or three times. So I'm face planting into the sand. I'm getting smashed. And I thought, I'm just going to watch the sunrise. So I just went out the back of the brakes and just sat there on a surfboard and watched them surf. And then watch the sunrise up above, and it was just like, "Whoa, it's magic!"
So, that sounds beautiful. Surf?
No,
do I sit watch on the a sunrise? Board? Yeah, yes. Dude. For me, it was always the getting out. The paddling is more like I could do all of it, but the paddling. I guess I've gotten some unlucky experiences where there was one in particular that stands out that I was like caught in a rip current, and I didn't know it was a rip current, so like I kept trying to paddle, but nothing I did was working, and it was just so frustrating.
burning energy. It's very real here. That's why we take Isla to the beach, because she needs to learn it's fun but it's treacherous. And you got to learn the rules pretty quick.
Yeah,
you know, when we first took Isla, she took the swimming pool mentality into the ocean. She just got smashed,
you know, first time hitting waves.
Yeah, she's like woohoo and boom, and then she stood up and then boom again, and it's like, okay, lesson learned.
Respect on her for still going. She went back.
Yeah, that's right. She's 8, so her imagination now is talking about sharks.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, lie to her.
I remember when I moved here, the very first thing, I was terrified of tsunamis. I think I was in first grade, and I thought the big thing was that a tsunami was going to come. And like, we lived on a hill. Like, it wasn't going to... I just don't really have it. But like, my big thing, the imagination is, I was like, a tsunami's going to come. I'm done. I've never lived next to the ocean. Here it is.
Imagination, man. We love it, but it's treacherous as well. Like, it plays havoc for.
And I'm sure that has something to do a lot with your job and getting that mindset right. Cause it's, if you just leave your brain be, it's strange how we tend to repeat the negative thoughts more so than the positive ones.
Yeah, it's common. So we have to focus on the negative. It's part of our unconscious makeup will always drive towards the negative, and our brain will try to understand it. Anything that's a threat to us.
Yeah.
Anything survival. So anything physical, mental, or emotional that can cause us harm, we will almost become infatuated by it. We want to focus on it. And that's why, you know, me with my clients, we have to try and draw away from this, you know, what's happening, what's going on with the markets. There's a war going on. There's a pandemic going on. What? There's all this stress coming in.
Yeah.
And it's just layers. So they've got normal everyday stress plus this stress, and then they become infatuated by it, focused on it. Is this going to affect me? You know, we're talking about, am I going to get enough food? Petrol prices are going to go up. So am I going to be able to get to work? There's all these forward thinking, you know, stresses.
Yeah.
And the reality is, it's good to know, but it can be pretty damning. It can be pretty draining on the resources.
Definitely draining. Draining on the inner energy that you have throughout the day, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then you get into circles, and then we're all getting that negativity spiraling. Like, oh my God, did you hear about? So it's true. So it's real. And all I ask is for my clients to just do a little bit of a detox, to step away, to put it into their diaries. Like, we actually diarize to get away.
And now I got a little bit ahead of myself. What exactly is your company? What do you do? And yeah, like what, it's Stress Sciences, I believe is the name.
Yeah, that's right.
So how did that start?
Yes, I'm a, on paper, I'm an exercise scientist. And then in the UK, I was a lecturer and I was studying multi-stressor environments. So we were, let me tell you the truth. It was a great way for me to go and climb mountains where we've got altitude, temperature, physical activity, you know, all these factors. And then I would just take measurements of people who were going into high altitude environments to look at how it affected the stress markers and the immune markers.
So you've always kind of studied stress throughout your career. That's been a big part of it.
Yeah. And now the stress scientist term, that's not a real term.
Yeah.
It's actually it someone is now. Called. Well, that's right. That's right. Even the LinkedIn profile I've got where I call myself a chief wellbeing officer, you'll see in my copy that I'm actually saying it's not part of the Australian sort of leadership framework. No one's heard of a chief wellbeing officer over here.
Yeah.
So I'm making it happen because we've got CFOs, COOs, CEOs. Yeah, yeah, that's great. But where's the CWO?
We're seeing a lot of new positions coming out. Like I remember in business school, I heard something about some companies are starting to have chief ethics officers and many different positions are starting to open up because we're realizing that, yeah, I think it is important to diversify the board with many different specialties, not just the classic what's going to help us raise a profit.
Exactly right. And we also know that if, you know, well-being directly impacts profit.
Yeah.
Productivity, engagement, retention, all these, we know all that. But what's happened is it's handed to HR. You know, human resources have now got to cope with the, hey, you're supposed to look after all this plus everyone else's well-being.
Yeah.
And it's really tough, so.
Yeah, I get that. I get that because HR has, you know, I guess the stigma that we currently have around HR, but it's not 100% focused on the well-being of people. There's no any one role that does that. And right. What kind of led you to that path of wanting to start this chief well-being officer role and starting Stress Sciences?
Yeah, I was distributing kits. The backstory there was the visa and then why we ended up in Australia. So we're in a small town outside of Adelaide and my wife had the visa. She was the sponsored person. She was the full-time worker. And we had Isla, who was 18 months. So I had to build a business from the back of the house and I started to distribute these kits. So really I set an e-commerce and a logistics business up.
Oh,
and I would be working with the military and universities and I'd be sending out kits. And then a couple of consultants come to me and said, hey, you can quantify stress. It's like, yeah, Ken. Could we use that in our world? I was like, all right, I'll create a little package for you and an information pack. And then it's great, but we don't really understand what the numbers mean. I was like, okay, well, we'll talk about the numbers. Then this is how I'd interpret the numbers. And in the end, it's like, why don't you just come in and talk to our clients? I was like, okay. And that was it. And all of a sudden I'm flying into Melbourne and Sydney and I'm standing in front of people and we're talking about cortisol awakening responses, diurnal, nocturnal or circadian rhythms and patterns. And people are like, whoa. I'm like, this is kind of not new.
Yeah.
But it was to them. And that self-awareness piece that come out of that, just raising people's self-awareness about understanding their body rhythm and how we corporate world fights against that rhythm and how that can then, just because of the time, the demands, you know, I've got people who work in multiple time zones who are expected to attend all meetings at all times.
Oh, I've seen that before. Yeah, I get that.
We've got the classic where, you know, we've got diversifying boards and not just boards, sorry, that's the top end of the business, but diversifying workforces now.
Yeah.
But we still expect them to work 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And I think COVID, if anything, has really forced this conversation where we now know you can work anywhere. You run your own schedule. You can, as long as you're delivering.
Truly,
Yeah, that's right.
As long as you show up to the meetings you got to show up to and do the job that you're supposed to do, Yeah, it's becoming a lot more you decide. And I think that's a healthier way as well. I think it's a lot easier on, you know, let's say the old argument of some people are morning people, some people are night people. Like I know someone
who gets
a lot, their most productive hour is 9 p.m. And I was like, not for me. I go to bed at 9:30 and wake up at 5:30. Like I just love the mornings a lot more. So it's, a lot of people are able to kind of free up their schedule and free up what they're doing now.
However, just from my end, there's this whole, where do you want to start? The conversation is this, that, you can work from home, but there's a sense of guilt and you don't have the feedback you'd normally get from being in the office. So, you know, you're my boss and you're like, hey, Chris, how you going? I'm like, okay, Armand. Is it Armand?
Yeah, Armand.
I just want to pronounce that right.
Thanks.
Armand is, he likes me, or, you know, we're doing good work, or, hey, I love your work, Chris. We're getting this feedback in the brain of reassurance. When we're at home, people are overreaching to try and justify their pay pack. And this is an issue where we have to be, we believe until the dust settles and we figure out where we sit. I'm still finding people believe they have to be all things to everyone at all times. And that's causing other issues. So I love the flexibility. Look at me. I'm in the back of my house. The beach is down the road. I didn't do a 2-hour commute to get to the office.
Yeah.
But I work for myself. People who work in large groups or organizations really have to figure out where the rules apply to them and where the boundaries are for them.
I agree.
That's something I've been having lots of conversations with at the moment.
I actually, a previous guest, we had this conversation where we talked about it's difficult getting feedback from the virtual world because a lot of times you're just messaging, or maybe sometimes you go on video, but you don't get to see their body language. If you're like strictly doing email, Slack, Teams, whatever your messaging is, you don't even get to hear the tone of their voice. Like most of the like training, I remember the very first job I had, a lot of the training I did was through a messaging. And it was so difficult, I guess, like for me, just because, I don't know, I've always learned by doing, but I was never the reader, like the book reader to learn things. So it was like just very, I ask questions. That's how I learn. That's why I enjoy talking to people and doing this podcast, because I like asking questions. And it's not the same when you're not getting the feedback in person.
No, because you interpret the classic messaging on the phone, right? So, why are they being like that? What is that supposed to mean? because the intonation and the tone and the body language feedback we get is vital for our communication. Yeah, you're right.
And so you mentioned you would send out kits originally. What was inside these kits?
We've got swabs. They're becoming quite famous now because over here we've got the RAT test, the rapid antigen test for, I wouldn't say diagnosis, but they're just to see whether we are positive or negative COVID. Hmm. It's the same technology. So you put a swab in your mouth, it collects saliva, you put it into a buffer that, you know, stabilizes the analytes, then we drip it onto a little cassette, like a pregnancy test or what we call a lateral flow. And then that will draw the analyte across the card. And then we can look at the concentration of cortisol, testosterone, IgA, which is your immune defense, IgG, and alpha amylase. But that's just a number. So I can tell you what your cortisol profile looks like, but then we need the subjective data around that to know.
Wow.
Is it ascending, descending? Is it a static trend? What's happening for your like acute and chronic stresses over that might help us understand that profile.
Interesting. Yeah. Sounds like a comprehensive test. And I read the pamphlet that you guys have, or like that ebook, and one thing that really stuck out to me actually was on your profile saying that you have a passion for unlocking potential in people who feel stuck. How did that happen? Like, how did you discover this?
Yeah, that's a great question. A beautiful job I used to have in the UK was working in education. And I was a sports lecturer. So we would get mainly young men. That was changing because I was 10 years. So there was lots of women, girls, females coming into the sport area. But they would come to college because they wanted to get out of school. And then they'd come to sport because they thought they were going to be playing soccer every day. It's just go and play sport. And I tried to create this pathway within, because I was a program manager. Now, where do you want to go? Do you want to get into employment or do you want to get into higher education? Because you don't have enough points for higher education. We have to create that pathway for you. Or if you want to go to employment, let's give you the skills required to get into employment.
Okay. Wow.
And so you've got these young men, women that go, I don't know. I hated school. I just want to get out. And so I come to college, but I don't know what I want to do. And all of a sudden, if you could just start to get the curiosity piece going and then start to give them, you know, there's a reason why they hated school. Maybe, you know, it's the institution they didn't like being part of, or the identity, or they just had bad experiences, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
A lot of them lacked simple things like confidence and self-belief. And really, you know, I'm teaching anatomy and physiology and training programs and sport, but really it was about just unlocking this self-belief piece. And then all of a sudden it's, well, now what? And we can get them into higher education. Now they've got degrees, you know, probably the first in their family ever to go to university and ever get a degree. Now what? Let's go. And so I thought that would just be that role within education, but I've actually found it's the same in corporate. And so you get emerging leaders. They're very skilled. They're very good, but sometimes they just need that little bit of self-belief,
yeah,
and a little bit of understanding their body will help them understand that people who lack self-belief can overreach, and when they overreach, they burn out.
I see. Interesting. Yeah, I asked that because I, like, when I was done with college, I even in college, I felt stuck is a great way of putting it. To me I was lost. I just felt like I was wandering around, like I was, and COVID granted did not help. The whole everything getting locked down, shut down. I never really got to meet my team. Like all work my entire career has been virtual. So it was like an interesting for someone very social, and I just had this whole idea of like, oh, I was going to do this job, things were going to go on, and then I felt so lost, man. I felt like everyone would tell me that I was doing the right things, and I knew I was doing the right things for myself, but nothing felt right. And it was the strangest feeling of like just walking with a wet blanket on you all the time, like not knowing how to get that off. So it's definitely something that I see there's a very big need, especially amongst like my age group, the early 20s, right? Getting out of college, you spent your whole life being told this is what you do. You go to school and then you go to get your degree and then you start a job. And then when you start that job, it's like, you're sitting in your desk working 9 to 5 thinking, now what?
Yeah, 100%. And there's a truth in that. It's kind of a hard truth for me. I get normally drawn into like the high end, the leadership teams, because that's where the spend is up here.
Yeah.
And what I've had to do over the last 3 or 4 years is really start to look at, okay, we call C-suite or exec level.
Yeah.
What about emerging talent? What about people we can identify that we, you know, have got promise and really good ambition and tenacity and, you know, not confidence, but how do we support them and give them the skill set so we can raise them up when they get to this level? And then I've got the technology now where we can go into organizational level. So we're using cloud-based solutions and all the innovation and tech that's come out. We can now start to support and gather data around this whole workforce piece, as opposed to just spending money up here.
Oh, interesting. It's helping the entire organization rather than just the people at the top.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a drive from me personally, where I'm going, yeah, but what about these beautiful people that come into your organization, but we, you know, they lack the support or the understanding or whatever it might be. And you've got some beautiful talent down there. And often we go, well, these are dispendable, but these are, you know, these at the top. And I'm going, no, I disagree. The future of your business is down here.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a lack of like we've talked about, confidence or understanding or self-belief, or raise them up. Your organization will only get stronger that way.
Yeah, that's very anyway, true.
That's my slam my fist on the desk. Come on.
That's yeah, I can see you're very passionate about this. And how does one get unstuck or find their passion? Because I have my own theories and things that have worked for me, but I'd love to hear it from an expert.
Look, the stickiness is we often like to look at things like, oh, well, I just don't have the opportunities, or maybe it's my area, or maybe it's, you know, my ethnicity or my background, or we've got all these sticky points or reasons why. But we always have to start with the internal dialogue. And what's our identity? So, you know, work is one aspect of our life. And I'm having lots of conversations around, well, you know, leaders and CEOs of organizations go, why should I have to know about everyone's well-being in my organization? And our only identity is always work. And so I go, well, what are we doing now then? Here's the thing. Who's got the duty of care? And that's often a real horrible conversation, because people, it sounds horrible, and health and safety. And but I'm going, we as leaders have a duty of care now to understand our people, and to understand that they're not sacrificing, I don't know, finance, relationships. We're not sacrificing these other arenas in our life just to work.
Yeah.
And I don't think many people are ready for that conversation yet.
And I think that's the way it was for a while. That was just the norm. That was just status quo.
Yeah. So work is one aspect. You talked about, how do we become unstuck? Well, look, we need jobs. You know, and I understand we've got welfare. That's great. But that's not an ambition or a life goal.
Yeah.
So we want to contribute somehow. And that's normally through work. But if work is not what's ticking your box, the answer is not to quit. It's either to align your values to the organization's values. A value alignment piece is what we do. Some people can't see how they contribute to the bigger picture. So we need to align their values to get on board with, you know, do you understand how you're contributing to the business? Do you understand how you're helping people? And I've had people go, yeah, but I'm just a cleaner. That's not technically true. And so just that alignment piece, it doesn't have to be just leaders. And also understanding, well, what are you doing in the other aspects of your life? If you're not getting fulfillment or joy, because, you know, this is an opinion I'm on, so forgive me on this one. People think that we're supposed to be happy all the time and jump out of bed and just all march to work and feel great about, you know. And that's not always the case for most people. It's a job. And or despite the fact that the organization is promising to save the world, most of our jobs in the real world, you know, we just perceive it as a job. So we have to find joy and understanding from other places in our life. And the disconnect between, yeah, but I'm putting 90% of my energy into work, I don't really get it because I don't enjoy it that much, which most people like to. They like to whisper, I don't really enjoy it that much. So, okay, so what about the other aspects? How are you filling yourself in those? Well, I don't really have time.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. So we've got this whole, you know, what is work-life balance? And so when people are stuck, it's the realignment piece, the internal realignment. And it's not as big as what they imagine. It's not changing your whole life, because we get to a point where we go, I'm going to quit my job. But no, that's not the answer.
The grass is greener at the other job. That's what they're thinking. Yeah.
The grass is green where you water it, my friend.
Wow, that's really, yeah, that's great. I like that.
Yeah.
That's great. I remember I talked to Kellen, actually. One thing he said to me that was really, like, I was looking for something to like complete what I was trying to do with this podcast. And he said this really interesting thing that was, preventing burnout is not about taking things away, but adding more meaningful things to your life. And that I was like, whoa, it truly is like you can do the same things, but if you have things outside of, you know, work that give you joy, your hobbies or spending time with your family, maybe hanging out with your dog, like whatever your thing is, as long as you make room and time for that as well, you'll be able to achieve a little bit more.
Well, time is one of the biggest stresses we have. We don't have enough. People say, I need to find more time. Are they going to find it down the back of a drawer somewhere? Like, there's more time somewhere if I can just find it. It's like, nope, that's not the case. So how you spend your time and how you prioritize your time, you know, we can start to look at systems and process. We can look at efficiencies. I get that. But also energy spend. And then how much is giving us energy back? You know, me going to the beach with my dog and my family, that's bucket fillers or fulfillment. You know, that's joy. It's time well spent. Me growing my business and working with clients, that's time well spent. Something I enjoy. And we just have to figure out, when people feel stuck or overwhelmed, or not burnout, burnout's trauma. So if you're already in burnout, you're in a whole different place. But people who are overwhelmed, who can't see the light, they just feel stuck, the wet blanket over them, whatever it might be, then it's simply just a matter of the only thing they can think about is taking things away.
Mm.
So I get your point to Kellen is, you know, Kellen's saying, stop trying to take things away, just find more meaning. It's that balance of, well, I just feel like I don't have time to breathe, so I need to take things away. It's this perception that if we take it away, we'll find more time.
So how do you find more time then?
You don't. There is no more time. It's
the one thing we all have in common in this world.
Yep. And we don't have much of it, I can tell you. And the answer is not to stay up till 2 a.m. to try and get the work done so there's less pressure tomorrow, because by the time you wake up at 6 a.m., you know, you're facing it again. And in my world, I play with that a lot. So people don't have time to eat because they're so busy. People don't have time to sleep because they're so busy. I mean, these are fundamental human factors.
Yeah.
But they say to me, well, how can I perform better? Is it a supplement? What do I need to take? It's like, man, you're in the wrong conversation. Like, you're thinking, how can I force myself through this? Which is a classic sign of, you know, the overwhelming to burnout realm.
Interesting.
So I think, you know, when it comes to how do we find more time, is the classic of starting to say no and, you know, prioritizing which arena you're going to play in and for how long for. So no one's saying you don't have to work. No one's saying, oh, you know, stop working. That's not possible. So what we're saying is, well, you can go heavy on work. Let's do a sprint, if you like. Let's look at a four-week window where you're going to be super organized, super involved in work, and then you're going to reduce that engagement with work and start to prioritize other aspects of your life.
I also really like the saying no. Sometimes we just want to maybe people please or maybe achieve more, do more. Like whatever it is, you just start saying yes to everything that gets put on your plate. Until all of a sudden you feel like you're drowning in all this work or whatever it may be. Responsibility. It doesn't just have to be work, but responsibility. You're just responsible for so many things and it keeps piling on. And I've seen it firsthand. A lot of people have a hard time saying no.
Mm. That's why women are more likely to burn out than men. They're more agreeable. Mm. That's not me. That's HBR, Harvard Business, and there's a few articles out there now, a bit of research suggesting that because women are more conscientious and agreeable than men, then they are more likely to keep overreaching. They want to be, I mean, I talk about my wife here because it's safer. I'm not talking about all women. I don't understand all women and not claiming to. There's my disclaimer out there for the listeners. But we know that they want to be, you know, the perfect mum, the perfect wife, the perfect friend, the perfect employee. They're just constantly trying to make sure everyone's happy. And the term I use is they throw themselves under the bus. You know, it's not about me, it's about them, making sure they're okay. And whereas men are a little bit, not all, but men are a little bit better at going, nah, not doing that. That's a very large generalization, I know, but it's just a classic way of explaining to people that, you know, saying no is important, but it goes against your inner conversation for a lot of us.
I feel like I've had a very tough time building myself to be someone who says, no, I can't do this. Or I, like, to me, it's more of a fact of like, I will say yes, because if someone's like, oh no, you can't do this, it then becomes a challenge. It then like, I will overreach because it's me trying to prove to nobody really, but you know, I'm just trying to do it and say yes to everything. So it takes a lot to build that, but it starts small, you know, maybe it's saying no to the little things, and then building up.
But we're back to the prioritization again, because people of, if I said power, we're not, you know, people of authority, if you like, or your boss or anyone like that, you're less likely to say no to them and more likely to say no to your family members, to your friends. Like, you're going to come out on the weekend. No, I ain't got time for that. Whereas work, so here we are in the work-life balance piece again, you're more likely to say yes to your boss or yes to your colleagues at work. Because, you know, that's your status in society. That's your position.
Yeah. I was going to say, doesn't that have to do with like the way you see them? Like, the reason you won't say no is because you see them as having higher status than you.
Not always, but yeah. I mean, if you are a people pleaser, you like to please all people, even strangers. We find, you know, people are like, oh, they don't know me, so I want them to see the best version of me. So I just say yes.
Yeah.
So, but in our world, my world, in corporations, it's normally saying yes to the authorities and the organization and no to friends, family, and mostly self. Let's be brutally honest there. I really could do with some time off, but no, we haven't got time for that. It's like, man, that's exactly when you got the time for.
Yeah. And one thing I really liked that you told me was a key part of your program is actually asking people, when was the last time you laughed? How did that, first of all, how did that come up? And second of all, what are the reactions that you normally get from that kind of question?
Well, okay. So how did that come up? I asked that question randomly one day because I was invited in to speak to a board. And of course, you go through reception and then you go through the layers of the business. Then you go out the back of the offices and I'm walking through and I'm going, whoa, like there's clouds, dark clouds in here. And so as I'm going through, one of the things I have to do is to determine whether I can work with that organization and those people.
Yeah.
Not like, have I got the time? It's, are they going to listen? Are they buying into what we're trying to achieve? If not, then it's pointless. It's a waste of their money and a waste of all of our time. If they're not going to buy into the data and buy into the consultation and the recommendations, then we're going to get nowhere fast.
Yeah.
And so I sat there and it was just this conversation, you know, I'm not going to pick on names. They're going, look, we've got a fantastic place here. Everyone's really happy. And, you know, we do a really good job here about doing A, B, and C. It's like, great. So just some things I picked up while I'm in the room. Like, when was the last time you heard laughter in the office? And it threw them. And one of them turned around to me and said, but this is a workplace. Yeah, true. It's a workplace. Like, and I'm looking at them now. I don't understand what you mean by that. Like, they're in this box for 8 hours a day. Are you suggesting they're not allowed to laugh because it's unprofessional? So straight away, you can imagine.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the exit because they're not, you know, if that's their through
line. That's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
Some of the most fun times I've had have been with coworkers because you exactly. are with them. Like, you're with them so much of your life, like not just more your day, family. Like your life. Yeah. So if you can't enjoy their presence, you're doing yourself a big disservice. Like, some great times I've had, I've been with just like coworkers getting lunch or hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the things, we've got this, you know, kombucha on tap. I think I read that the other day, kombucha on tap, ping pong tables, and that's culture. And it's all, well, that's not. Get rid of all that. Sit down in a circle. In Australia, we call it having a yarn, like having a chat and connecting on a human level and laughing and just, oh my, you know.
Do you need a moderator for that, or you just get in a circle, start talking?
Well, hopefully you moderate yourselves, like society. If we are adapted socially, you should be able to moderate yourselves. That's, again, that's not always the case. And it depends on where the business is, isn't it? So we could have a department that's really under a lot of pressure right now, and that little circle starts to become fractured. Like, why haven't you done that yet? And I'm waiting for you. And, you know.
So like the time they have this kind of chat also is important.
Yeah. What you can do is to moderate is set rules, boundaries. Could be as simple as no work chat. I don't know. Depends on the group. Maybe that is a meeting. That is their actual, rather than a boardroom and a PowerPoint, sitting around having a chat is actually their meeting time, walk-in meetings, things like that. We can set rules and guidelines in there. Not too many rules, otherwise it's just like another job.
The point of it's fun. Yeah, you're trying to have fun.
Yeah. Well, fun allows you to tap into creativity and imagination, which is right back at the beginning of our conversation, which is important. If I'm in a high stress state, I can't properly access that prefrontal cortex, that executive function, that high level cognitive function, the puzzle solving piece, empathy, all these things that sit in that frontal part of the lobe. Our access to that gets restricted if in high stress states. So actually creating an environment where we can relax, laugh, and discuss, you'll find that creativity starts to rise.
Interesting. Anyway. Yeah, that was a lot to take in. No. This is some really good stuff. That I just had to think about the fact that, like, I was trying to go back and think of all the times that even recently that I've been stressed out, and I've seen it, like, you're not having fun. you're not being creative. Like, one thing that I really like doing is playing music. I don't know if you can see my bass and my guitar. Yeah. Bass and guitar back there. That's my outlet. And I actually got good at guitar in college when I was very stressed out. And the only thing that calmed me down before tests or anything, like I was feeling anxious, is when I would play guitar, because for some reason I could just go to a different place. And I noticed the times that I would be not more productive, but more studious. What's the word? Like, I've just felt the better about whatever that stressor may be, maybe my test, maybe a paper, whatever, after I would play guitar than before.
Mm-hmm. There's a few things there. One is the action, not the motor cortex and the piece of the brain. Because once you learn riffs, chords, it's actually just tapping into memory as opposed to creativity. But then because of the action and processing what comes next, you're actually in the moment. It's a classic sign of mindfulness. You know, you're in the moment. So you're not ruminating about what happened in the day. You're not anxious about what's coming up in the future. You know, I've got that test tomorrow. Oh my God, I've got to do A, B, and C. Oh, what happens if, you know, these conversations in our brain. And playing the guitar, whether you play it for half an hour, 2 hours, whatever it might be, you're allowing the brain to do something we call downregulation. So we've got this accelerated response, which can mental, physical, you know, flashbacks to high school, it'd probably be called fight or flight or something like that. We need to downregulate, slow the brain down, which allows us to normalize the hormones in the brain and the body. The second thing is you create a pattern. It's called anchoring. So you create this pattern that when you pick up your guitar and it sits on your thigh and your hands get in position, your brain will go, I know what's coming now. And it will start to put you in that state. It's like meditation.
Interesting. That was actually, I was going to have two follow-up questions. One was, how does meditating affect that? Like, if I'm really stressed and my thoughts are very racy and heads all over the place, a lot of times I notice I get really cloudy around 3 or 4. The coffee's worn off, the day is coming to a close, and I feel like I have a very hard time focusing. Like, if I were to do like a 5-10 minute meditation, would that kind of help align, get my head right? Or that, I had one question meditating, and the other one was to go on into a little bit about anchoring. That sounds like a really interesting concept.
Okay, so the meditation question is probably bigger than what you may have imagined. So the time of day is relevant, because at that time of the day, normally we call it 1 p.m. or 2 p.m. itis, which means you get to that time of day and your energy's flagging. You're looking for coffee. You're looking for chocolate. 3 or 4 p.m., you know, it's kind of the end of the day. You're only at work for another hour, but you're dragging it out, which leads us to a much deeper conversation about how productive are we from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Because in the morning hours, your natural circadian body rhythm is you get this high rise of cortisol and adrenaline, noradrenaline, to mobilize energy, because that's the active part of the day. If you look at, depends on your profile, but if we look at profiles, by the time it drops, I realize this video is probably back to front, but by the time it drops, it's normally around about 1 p.m. and we lose that energy pathway. So we start to feel a little bit flaggy, like, don't have the energy, can't concentrate, can't focus.
I was literally thinking about this today on my walk. I was like, the Spaniards got it right. They get their siesta in the middle of the day and then they go back at it. Like that, to me, that would be so ideal. It's just 2 to 4, take a quick nap, and then work, you know, 4 to 6 or 7, like what, make up those hours afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that was the heat of the day and everything else that goes in with that. But the body clock rhythm is actually 100% correct. You could, if you can get in, because what happens is you say to people, I used to talk to organizations about napping, and the Japanese have got these nap pods, and nap pods are now in the airports.
Sounds excellent. Go in.
Well, the problem is people go into a nap pod, but you've got 30 minutes now or 45 minutes. I don't know many people that can shut the body down quickly to go into a sleep state and then come out. But you can learn it.
Really?
It's a skill, 100%. If you start to, you know, you get into the pod when you first start, like meditation, you sit down with your legs crossed and your, you know, your fingers in a certain position, whatever that might be. I meditate from martial arts. And but you sit down and then you just sit there and you've got time to then think about everything that's going on. Like, oh my God, I've got so much to do and I shouldn't really be sitting here and just wasting my time. You know, I would go in and speak to corporate people who work in 70-hour weeks. And for me to sit there and go, I want you to sit still for 45 minutes and do nothing, is actually quite offensive to them. So we have to do moving meditations. We have to do, you know, down regulation strategies throughout their day. We would look at their HR, their heart rate variability, and look at, well, you know, are you just up all day or are you finding ways to down regulate?
Okay.
During the day. So back to your question, meditation at 3 p.m. Yeah, could be one way of just slowing the body down. And remember, it's slowing anyway.
Yeah.
You just got to let the body catch up, because as far as your body's concerned, it's lost an energy pathway. Have we layered that question properly? I think so.
Yeah. That was a can of worms. I didn't know it was coming, but it was good.
Yeah,
stuff.
That's right.
There was what you mentioned about the sleep thing. I remember one time, like there was a period of time where I was just working a lot and not getting that much sleep. And I remember being able to, like, my body needed REM so desperately that in 15 to 20 minute naps, I would be dreaming. And they were like very vivid, intense dreams. And I just remember thinking like, wow, I need to sleep more.
Well, it's, you know, we got this 8-hour number. It's not
what's the ideal, case. What's the ideal hour? And does it matter when you sleep to wake up? Like, is that, I've heard that kind of matters.
Your body will adjust. I mean, jet lag's a classic. you go to a different time zone, takes maybe some people 24, 48, some people a week to adjust. The body clock can change and shift. It's the body craves sleep. It's become an integral part of, you know, what happens in the deeper, the two first phases of sleep, of deep sleep, really is where all the magic happens, the recovery, the resets, the creation, the, you know, all that beauty that happens. And that happens within the first 4 hours of, you know, 4 to 5 hours of sleeping.
Hmm.
So when I say to people, what time do you wake up during the night? They normally say 2 p.m. around about 2 or 3, not p.m., sorry, a.m. Normally about 2 to 3 a.m. What time do you go to bed? I could guess and say, what, about 10? Because you then look at that window, the four to five hours, and that's when you're coming out of your deep sleep phase. You're starting to re-engage with your environment again. Remember, we're mammals, so we have to re-engage with our environment because we need to detect if there's any danger. And so people think, and I'm not laughing at them, but, you know, the alarm goes off, you go to sleep, deep sleep, and then the alarm goes off again and you wake up. So, well, no, if you look at your sleep phases, you're constantly in and out, in and out. And normally if we become awake at that 2 to 3 a.m., that's it, the brain starts to accelerate.
Hmm.
And away we go.
I've seen that chart of the cycles before. It was it was really interesting. I think it was in a psychology class. We went over that.
Hmm. Well, after that second phase, your first, I call it dump. That's not a very nice word, but that the first secretion of cortisol is normally around 2, 3 p.m. The body's starting to prepare to wake up, which is unfortunate for us, because as soon as we get into that conscious stage, eyes are awake. My daughter came into my bedroom this morning because she had a bad dream at 2, 3 in the morning. Boom, I'm up.
There you go.
It's one of those. Why don't we just crack on with our day? And so, you know, one or two poor nights sleep, it's when it's continuously poor, continuously disrupted. And when I say continuous, I don't know, people like numbers. So if you had 3 consecutive disturbed nights of sleep, it can be like being on drugs. So almost drunk driving, it can really start to affect your cognitive function. And that's when siestas, napping, resting can just help regulate that.
Yeah. And how important would you say establishing the right habits is to all of this?
It's vital. Sleep is a skill, and it's a skill that you have to try and prepare for. And when I say skill, I'm cautious with that because people think, well, you don't learn to sleep, you just sleep.
Yeah.
But the skill of down-regulating and preparing for the sleep phase of your cycle is it's about being organized. It's about being
consistent.
Yeah, sorry. Consistency is a much better word. I'm thinking about perfectionism is the wrong way to go down here. It's not that at all.
Yeah.
But typically what we do is we run out of time. We start watching screens, social media interaction.
Hmm.
The term I use when I speak to people is normally when the house goes quiet, the brain goes busy. When we start to lose the noise and distraction from what we're doing, we then start to ruminate.
Yeah.
Or then...
I never thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense on the fact that, like, I noticed for myself, I really like having music playing all the time, music playing some sort of sound. Mm. And then when it goes off, that's like when I'm laying in bed and there's nothing going on. Even something as small as a fan would benefit me so much. But if I hear nothing, it's just whatever's going on in your head. Yeah, that's tough.
Mm. Yeah, there's hypersensitivity to that as well. And there's another conversation in there. But it is that. It's the ability to know that you can teach yourself. And I'm going to lean on this anchoring again. Your body It's complex, very, very complex, but it does love the simple things. And that is, I like to know what's come up, and sleeping feels good.
Yeah.
We love it. We just sabotage it. Playing your guitar feels good. And so you've got into this habit now of going, look, I'm feeling a little bit tight, a little bit anxious here. I'm just going to pick up a guitar and just hit a few chords.
Yeah.
And what happens from a physical, mental, and emotional state is you've got a certain feeling that you'll get from playing the guitar. The response in the body will be set, because as soon as you pick up that guitar, it's like, oh, yeah, like just play a tune I know really well. It sounds really good when it comes together. Flip that on its head and go, right, now learn a new something different. Then it's like, oh, got that wrong. It doesn't sound right. You get that sort of...
get a little frustrated.
Yeah. That's right.
I know that feeling.
That's right. And so when you pick up the guitar to relax, you probably just have a few that you just like to pluck away with. And
the same songs that there's a couple like of my relaxing songs, the favorite ones I know how to play.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one's Blackbird. I know that song very well, and it's just so soothing sounding. Like, yeah. And what about you personally? What kind of habits would you say you have attributed to your success?
Success is an interesting one. Look, I picked up some beautiful things from the sport and the military, and mindset is a classic. Now, I'm not a mindset coach, but we used to have sayings in the Royal Marines and the Royal Marine Reserves back in the UK, and we just put ourselves into some situations that weren't comfortable. That was the whole point. It was about, you know, that cliche of being comfortable with uncomfortable.
Yeah.
One of the things we used to say was no cuff too tough. So if you just have to have that flexibility mindset and adaptability piece all the time. And when we were training, we never knew when the end was. It's not like a finish line with training. You would have a Bergen, a Webin, and a weapon on your back, and we would be out in a forest somewhere, and no one knows when it's going to finish. And all these sort of little things that I'd never really accounted for, but as I started to reflect, I go, yeah, these lessons are pretty strong.
Interesting. So it was one of those things that you didn't notice it then, but as time went on, you were thankful that it happened.
Yeah, well, now when I talk about it to people, and you know, I was surrounded by a very similar group of people, so it all made sense. It was just the way it was. It was the culture, if you like.
Yeah.
And we would go out and, yeah, I don't know, push-ups, just anything. It was just all crazy. Should we go rock climbing on the weekend? Well, we don't know how to do it. Yeah, but we'll figure it out. Health and safety, you know, don't get me wrong. Don't try this at home, kids. But you just get into this piece of, I'll give it a go. I'm just gonna work it out and make it happen.
Yeah.
There would be a lot of conversations for me now going, should I be a consultant and a coach? I mean, I've coached most of my adult life, soccer. But when it comes to this corporate coach, there was a moment at the beginning going, well, who's going to listen to me? But then as I...
That imposter syndrome.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I deal with it a lot. And I had to catch myself very quickly. And that probably leads me down to where I'm going here is people say to me, almost in a sarcastic nature, oh, I suppose you don't get stressed. But yeah, of course I do. Look at my hair. I haven't had hair for... I've got an 8-year-old daughter, for crying out loud. The only difference is that I've got a set of tools and a very acute understanding about my body, the self-awareness piece. I know when it's happening. And I've got tools I can tap into constantly that I know will help me to downregulate to get on top. I've got enough understanding in my armor now that if I recognize the signs early enough, I will decrease the exercise. I will stop drinking. I will increase my fluid intake. You know, I will start to put some time back into my family and all those other things that goes on. I've just got this way. Yeah. It's the flexibility and adaptability mindset.
It's not that you don't feel stress. You've just acquired many tools to handle it when it pops up.
Exactly right.
And now, are there any bad habits that you've removed from your life that have helped you out a lot?
Yep. I don't drink alcohol. Sugar reduction. Inflammation in the body is a classic.
Yeah, that's something that's been really big in my family lately. That's the talk of our meals. It's getting rid of inflammation. I've noticed a difference, especially at my house. I will be the first to admit that of the family, whenever I leave, I do break this. But being gluten-free, my family tries not to eat gluten or sticks to more, you know, rice than bread or what have you, I guess. But it's a new concept to me. Like, I still go out and have burgers and sandwiches, normal bread. But I do notice like a very clear, like the inflammation of your gut is actually a real thing that nobody thinks about. But like, I didn't consider for so much of my life. I was just going around, you know, feeling bloated.
Yeah. We normalize it. We don't know until we stop and go, God, I feel really light. So people who go on diets and they lose 5 pounds in the first 2-3 days, you know, that's not fat you've lost. That's fluid retention, inflammation, all these. So your body is, if you could just allow your body to heal itself, and it doesn't have to be forever. We're not saying you've got to be this type of a vegan or you don't have to do that. That's you've still got this personal choice.
Yeah.
All I know is that when you get into high stress states, if you start to reduce your inflammatory response, I'm not saying you're not allowed to drink alcohol. That's ridiculous. Our whole culture is built around alcohol. But one or two drinks to socialize is one thing, but getting drunk or drinking every night to escape from the, you know, that's just the reality of where I play. A lot of people try to escape with drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
It reduces the noise in the brain and,
I was going to say, you saw it with COVID. One of the funniest pictures that I remember, this meme that was coming out on Twitter, it was a coffee cup and a glass of wine on a relay race. And it was the coffee cup was handing over the glass of wine. And it was during COVID. It's like, these two things have kept me starting and ending my day.
It's true. You know, and then it's habitual. People come home and the first thing they do is, oh, I've got to relax. Open up the fridge, pour the wine. And then it becomes a different conversation.
What benefits have you noticed, or maybe not benefits, but what have you noticed any differences from not drinking alcohol?
Oh, well, I don't have 2 or 3 days worth of heaviness. Mm. Well, there's a social awkwardness about it. I can tell you that much. You go out and people are like, do you want a beer? It's like, no, I don't drink. Oh, okay. Are you ill?
No, I get that. My friend group did a sober October, so we didn't drink for that entire month. And the funny thing is, like, it was 4 or 5 of us doing it together, and we're in the same friend group, so we would go to parties, and like, the party without fail or bar wherever we were hanging out would end up just be us 5 in a circle talking because people were drinking and they didn't really want to like hang out with the sober guys. It was the weirdest. Like, it was actually strange how they. People would try and give us drinks and we're like, nah, we're good. And they just could not understand. They're like, what do you mean? I saw you drinking last week. I was like, I'm trying a month without it. And it was nuts. It was nuts.
So they'll alienate you because you're different.
Yeah.
I mean, that's dramatic. Don't get me wrong. They're not trying to push you out, but you're in a bar, but you're not drinking. You must be weird. Why don't you go and sit with the non-drinkers and we'll go with the drinkers? And of course, there's nothing worse than being a non-drinker watching someone get drunk.
Really? How come?
They're having the same conversations. They're repeating themselves. They're not making much sense. And you're just like, I don't get it. Sorry. You're so miserable. I know. Yeah, I know.
That's funny. Right. I'm laughing because one of my really good friends is sober and he has been his whole life. And I know he deals with that. Like, I'm a victim of saying the same thing over and over. And I'll be drunk and I'll still look back. I was like, I've definitely told this story before.
Do you know this one? Yeah, 50 times.
Like, I could hear you saying it across the bar, man. Yeah.
So look, you don't have to be a non-drink. You don't have to be a non-anything, really. All I do is I play with it as and when I need it.
Yeah, it's a great habit to cut out. It truly is. I saw so much benefit in my not just my sleep. Like I didn't really notice the sleep part, but I noticed waking up after like 2 weeks of not having any drinks, 2-3 weeks. Yeah. You just wake up feeling crystal clear every single morning. Like it was actually a very, like the most noticeable change that I had throughout that, that time that I took. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Let's flip it. I'm conscious about time, but let's flip it. So we've got people who are in, you know, they've got excessive workload. There's lots of stresses going on. I look at them and go, you need to cut back the exercise. And they go, what? But exercise is good for me. So what? If you're in a high stress state, you're in debt, like from a resource point of view, you're not recovering from your stress, but you're also now putting an extra load, like, I don't know, HIIT programs or, you know, heavy exercise load on top of that. You're just forcing yourself into a slower recovery state.
Mm.
So managing exercise is another. It's not just alcohol and foods, it's exercise as well. People go, yeah, but I've got to go smash myself. It's the only way I can start to relax and go to sleep at night. So, well, yeah, there's a resource debt that we've got to pay back first.
Interesting.
And so we can regress the load. It's part of what we used to do with the athletes is we, in athlete circles, we look at readiness to train or overtraining syndrome. And this is, you know, inadequate recovery, being disengaged from the sport, disillusioned, all these types of things, which is very similar. So I just take that idea in corporate world and look at burnout.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. And I do want to be mindful of your time. This has been a fantastic conversation. I feel like I could hear you talk for a lot longer, but you got,
I don't think
you
it's got any structure, is it? We're just chatting.
No, I know. I do have like some questions I try to prepare before, but I did just want to hear. So what's your creative outlet? I know you mentioned you really like swimming, water stuff, walking your dog. I actually saw your dog walking around in the back. Is it a black lab?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I can see him outside in the window. That's cool. What do you like to do for fun? How do you relax?
Well, I get a lot of look. It's not just the beach for me. I like to exercise. So I've got, you know, I'm a middle-aged man now. So I cycle rather than run on road bikes and stuff like that. For relaxation, I really just like to hang out with Isla, which is my daughter. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of joy at the moment, like today's surf lessons. So we'll take her surfing. That's my time at the beach. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, it's Friday nights aren't precious anymore. I don't need to go to the pub and I don't need to go. Look, I'm 43 now. I sound like that old guy. I really do. But I just get joy from different places. And creativity for me is actually my work.
Interesting.
So I've got,
that's cool.
I've got keynotes coming up where I stand on stage in front of, you know, a room full of people and how do I engage with them? Who are the audience? How can we get emotional interaction with these people? Because we want to create behavior change. So I never stand and do the same thing twice. I'm always trying to recreate and adjust and,
yeah, I would love that, man. Public speaking is my favorite thing in the world. I want to move into that at some point in my life.
Look, it's an honor. It's an absolute honor that people will trust me to get up and share my message with them. Because it's normally organizations that are paying me to come in and speak to their workforce. And so I just think that's an absolute privilege.
Nice. Yeah, that's... Hmm. That's beautiful. Also that you hang out with your daughter. That's a big sense of joy.
I've got a wife as well. I should mention her. Kate's in there somewhere. But it's a fulfillment piece in there as well. Because I know it's not going to be long before I'm just dad. It's just so uncool to hang out with dad. Like I've got friends now. She's already doing it. So she's separating herself from... Because she was an only child and we moved over to Australia, so we didn't have any family here. So it's really our little tight unit. But now she's like, I want to go with my friends. Like she's broadening the social circle, which is great. But I'm going,
my theory is it comes and goes. Just as a son, this is where it comes from. I don't have any kids. But as a son, I've noticed that there was a point in time where, you know, your parents are or your heroes, your favorite people, you love hanging out with them. And then you start going through like your adolescence, you're figuring yourself out and you're like, get out of my room, mom. Or you just don't want to hang out with your dad. You kind of push them apart. And then college, you go off, be your own individual person, figure things out. And then as I get older now, I love hanging out with my parents. I like seeing what they're up to. I actually listen to what they have to say. Cause before I would have been like, now let me figure out for myself. Yeah. And now I'm like, oh wait, they've actually lived longer than me. Oh maybe God, I should listen.
They were young once.
That's nice.
Right. So culture changes, pop culture changes, but human dynamics, not so much. So
I agree.
Us old people have got things to offer.
So now I just have like super fast final questions. And I wanted to say thanks for coming on. These questions aren't anything high pressure. It's like just something to share. I really like hearing what kind of content people consume. So I'm just out of curiosity. Are there any music or podcasts that you've been listening to lately? Anything you like?
Look, I've got the Huberman, Andrew Huberman. He's a bit of a go-to for me what I would classify as PD, like personal development for me. I've got Sapolsky. I normally mimic the book. So I'll read a book and then I'll get intrigued by their message. And then I'll go find them on the socials and then follow them and listen and sort of really get more deeper into where they're going with their research and what they're doing. So I spend a lot of time looking at research and data and trends, things like that.
Nice. And is there any recent or favorite movie or TV show that you liked that you'd like to share?
Oh man. That I'd like to share. No, I don't really write. I don't have terrestrial, what we call terrestrial or free TV here. I've got, you know, Netflix and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't lean on it too much.
Not a big watcher.
I'm a gamer. I like gaming.
Ooh, okay. What's your favorite game? I grew up playing a lot.
So at the moment, I will do a lot of mobile. Oh, I don't know. I don't know about if I can mention names or not, but I do a bit of mobile gaming. And a PS4. I'm still on the PS4. So we just got a new download for Destiny 2, which is something I'm playing with.
I'm pretty sure I played Destiny 2 on the Xbox. One, Xbox One, not 360. But yeah, I do remember Destiny 2. That's a good one.
Yeah. But I love gaming. I think to sit and watch TV, I would much rather be interactive with a game.
Interesting.
And look, I love the whole serotonin, dopamine buzz you get from leveling up characters and finding new gear, and I love it. I'm a gamer of heart. I was a gamer as a kid. It's not a plug in any way, but I'm really intrigued to get into esports.
Interesting,
because treating like it's a way in. It's remember my backstory about working with young men and women at college age. They're filling football stadiums now full of people watching eight players play a game on screens. Now, that's a culture. That's a whole movement going on there.
Yeah.
And what I'm looking at is we're starting to see professional clubs start to adopt esports as part of their business portfolio. But I'm looking at them going, well, why don't you give these esport athletes access to your high-performance suites, you know, nutritionist, dietitian?
Yeah.
Let me start to... And as they're posting all these, got to drink so much fluid a day, got to get my exercise in, you want them to directly impact the wider community, which are young men and women.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Is that your next steps? You're trying to get into that industry?
I want to become a well-being officer for esports.
That'd be pretty sweet. What about books? You reading any books?
What have I got at the moment? What is the book on my side at the moment? No, I've lost it. Where is it? The Resilience Shield. It's a Special Forces, the Pronk Brothers, and they're from WA, SA, from Australia. So they're previous Special Forces, and they've done a lot of research with universities to look at something called the Resilience Shield.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll look it up. I like getting book recs.
No, I was just going to say it's Ben Pronk, Dan Pronk, and I think it's Curtis. He's going to hate me for getting that name wrong. But I've met Ben and Dan. That's how I remember their names. I just haven't met the other author.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
And finally, where can people find you?
Oh, look, LinkedIn is my most active social because of it's just the platform I enjoy interacting with the most. And then, of course, you know, stress-scientist.com. You can see my beautiful black and white mugshot right in the middle of the screen. And you can find out more. I've just uploaded my business brief. Just had a graphic designer build that out about what we can offer through different layers of the business. That's just been added to my LinkedIn profile. So
nice. Well, thank you very much.
Come find me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Chris. It was great talking to you.
And it's a real joy to be connected. I know we're connected to Kellen and very rapidly. Hey, do you want to have a chat? Let's have a chat. Okay, let's chat Monday. Let's do it.
I know this was a very quick turnaround, and you are the first person I interviewed that I didn't know already previously before interviewing. And yeah. I'll admit I was a little bit nervous just talking to someone, but you made it so easy, and it was a true pleasure to talk. Thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, look, keep working at it. Keep asking the people. People are always happy to share their own stories. The podcast is such a beautiful way to share, you know, your interaction, human connection.
Yeah.
So keep going, man. It's great. Love your work.
Thanks. All right. You have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.